5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
E-books! Hello, and welcome back to Epochs. As I promised last time, I will continue the story of Verdun. Unfortunately, because of timings and because I started the breakfast show this morning, because I didn't manage my time perfectly this week, I'm going to have to do one more filler episode before I finish off the Verdun story. So anyone that's waiting for the last episode of the Verdun story, many apologies. But this week, because I thought last time was such a roaring success, I thought it was anyway, the SAS story. And people seemed to like it, said more special forces missions and raids, if anything. I've got to fill one more week. I'll do it with another special forces raid. There's so many to choose from, so many brilliant ones. But I've decided to talk about Operation Eike, or Operation Oak. And if anyone who doesn't know what Operation Oak was, it was the 1943 Nazi German, mission to rescue Mussolini. So I'm going to talk to you all about that today. And I'll tell the story as though you've never heard of it before. You know, people that know their stuff and are into World War II history and special forces stuff will probably know all about it because it's quite famous in those terms. But I think a lot of people might never have heard of it at all. So I'll tell the story as though it's entirely new to you. All right, let's jump straight in. So what happened was, Mussolini, in 1943, i.e. 2 years before the end of World War II, was actually deposed and removed from power and arrested by his enemies. And Hitler didn't like that and rescued him. Okay, that's the story in the smallest possible nutshell. But let's tell you a bit more about it. So Italy had quite a bad war, really. Pretty ignominious. And one thing I will say is that a lot of Italian troops have got a reputation, sort of a jokey reputation, for being terrible soldiers. They're not. They're as good as anyone else, basically. Their senior command was very poor. The average Italian soldier was fine. Like I say, as good as any other soldier, essentially. But they were equipped with bad equipment, and their top brass were really crap. And, of course, Mussolini at the very, very top, making pretty bad sort of grand strategic decisions over and over again. So the idea that the average Italian soldier is just a surrender monkey or is terrible at fighting, that's not fair and it's not true. But they had a bad war from the top, basically. So, I mean, they controlled a lot of North Africa. And by 1943, had been entirely kicked out of North Africa. You know, the Germans had to send over Rommel, the Desert Fox, and the Africa Corps to help the Italians not just completely immediately lose to the Brits in North Africa, because Britain controlled Egypt, and we had a big base of operations in Cairo, and it would have been relatively straightforward for us to just sweep the Italians out of North Africa. But the Germans prevented that for a long time. But eventually still, even with the help of the Americans by 1943, eventually the Allies, the Brits and the Americans, kicked the Germans and the Italians out of North Africa entirely. And of course, so that's like a massive humiliation and defeat for Mussolini and his government. And then there was the invasion of Sicily, and Sicily is part of Italy, right? It is Italian. The Allies sent in both Montgomery and Patton to race across Sicily and take Sicily. That's a whole massive story in and of itself. So eventually, by sort of what, late spring, early summer 1943, it was looking really bad for Mussolini and his government and the whole Italian war effort. And Mussolini had been the leader of Italy since the early 20s. He'd been the leader of Italy for like 20 years. So he was like an elder statesman in a way, not elder as in he was old, but he'd been on the scene for many, many years, much longer than Hitler, for example. But he had like basically a vote of no confidence. He didn't rule as an absolute tyrant. Like the way, I mean, he was tyrannical and he was a dictator and all that sort of thing. But his position wasn't like that of, say, Stalin, where nobody could question his position and there was no way he could be removed from power, or Hitler, similar as Hitler. Mussolini's position wasn't like that. He did, at least on paper, rule at the behest of the king, King Emmanuel of Italy, and there was like a ruling body, something like a parliament. It's not a parliament, but, you know, a ruling body, that if they voted to remove him, they could. So he was sort of an autocrat light, if you like. Anyway, Mussolini could be removed by political machinations in Italy. And that's what happened after the Sicily stuff, after North Africa and Sicily. There was, a political turmoil in Italy. You know, a lot of people were thinking, you know, we've trusted Mussolini, you know, he's had a good innings for 20 years. And the net result of all of that is that we're getting our asses handed to us all over the world, right? This was supposed, the Mediterranean was supposed to be our sea, Mare Nostrum, you know, it was supposed to be, this wasn't supposed to happen. He was supposed to do much better than this. He was supposed to be a new Caesar, right? He was supposed to sweep all before him and on and on and on. And all he's given us is defeats. So Mussolini's first political downfall comes around quite quickly. Like late at night, there was all sorts of meetings and votes going on. And the powers that be, just under Mussolini, voted that he should resign. Like, he's got to resign. And so Mussolini, not being a Stalin-type figure, sort of accepted it. I mean, he probably realised the writing was on the wall himself, at least politically at this stage. Like, you know, he was done politically. He'd lost support in the country and within the inner sanctums of political power. His position had been eroded to the point where they were forcing him to leave office. And so he complied with that. So he goes to the king, you know, to formally resign, which is what you do. And at that point, the king has him arrested. I think Mussolini didn't see that coming. Well, certainly didn't see that coming. Didn't think that would happen. But at that moment, like straight away, he's arrested and kept under arrest. Okay, so that all that happens in like the summer of 1943. Late summer 1943, all of that happens. But if anyone knows their history, they're like, wait, but Mussolini doesn't die until murdered by a mob until what, like April 1945. So what happens during all that time? Well, Hitler and German special forces rescue him. So that's what this story is. Operation Oak. All right, so what happens is the Italian cabal that have arrested Mussolini sort of suspect or know really that the Germans, and a lot of Italy is occupied by German forces, the German army is is totally bolstering up all of Italy. And they know that Allied forces at some point will invade Italy. And they did, the Anzio Bridgehead and all that stuff. That's a bit later. But they know that the Allies are going to invade and liberate Italy. The Germans know that. So the Germans sort of flooded Italy with loads of soldiers, few divisions. And so they know, this is Italian cabal that have got Mussolini, they know that if the Germans could, they would try and rescue him. Well, they suspect that, and they suspect correctly. So they keep moving Mussolini around all the time. Like every few days, they take him somewhere new. They take him to some little remote island in the Bay of Naples, or they take him to some other little remote island, a few days later, a week later, whatever, take him to a little remote island just off of Sardinia. And then they move him back to the mountains, the Apennine Mountains somewhere, and keep moving him around, just, you know, because they know the Germans will try and capture him. And they calculate that correctly, because Hitler's thinking is, like, it's just really, really embarrassing to fascism, to European fascism. It's embarrassing to Hitler personally, he thinks, if Mussolini is captured and then killed, you know, maybe put on trial and maybe publicly executed. All of that is just an embarrassment to him, Hitler. So he doesn't want that to happen. He considers Mussolini something like a personal friend. I mean, Hitler didn't really have many personal friends, and I don't think like Mussolini was like a proper mate, you know. But nonetheless, Hitler thought of him as a true ally and something of a friend, and certainly politically it would be in Hitler's interest to rescue him if he could. And he would install Mussolini as like a proper puppet, German puppet, in any sort of northern Italian rump state during the last years of the war. That's what Hitler wants. So Hitler had seen that earlier on in the war, British special forces had achieved various sort of incredible, amazing things, you know, in North Africa, if nothing else. 2-2 SS or L Detachment, special forces, commandos, dropping deep behind enemy lines and achieving remarkable things. Hitler had seen that was done and possible. Germans already had some sort of equivalents. But when Hitler sees this, he decides he wants his own version of that. He wants paratroopers that are like, you know, will do remarkable things. And apparently he tells his sort of senior staff to sort of make that happen. And to begin with, the story is that a lot of that order sort of passed around through various parts of the Wehrmacht, various parts of the German army or services. And no one really wants to do it. They think it's just one of Hitler's whims. But eventually it does sort of happen. And, I've got an account here from a man called Otto Skorzeny. Now, if anyone knows about this operation, he is sort of one of the main protagonists in it, if not the main protagonist. And there's an account here from him, just a few pages, of exactly how it all went down. Now, we have to take it with a pinch of salt, because we know Skorzeny actually survived the war and didn't die until sort of old age in the 1970s. And we know that his account is a little bit not entirely trustworthy. Like, most of the details are correct, but here or there it might be a bit sketchy or not entirely true. So I'll interrupt myself quite a lot to sort of tell you when I think that's the case, or when other historians have said they think that's the case. There's another important player in it, Major Moores of the paratroopers, because Skorzeny is an SS man. The mission to rescue Mussolini is undertaken by both paratroopers, i.e. just army, I mean specialist, but army guys under this Major Moores, and then a few SS guys, and Skorzeny is their leader. Skorzeny makes out that it was largely an SS mission, and they should take all the credit for it. But most scholars, World War II historians, think now that it was mostly a paratroop operation, and there was only like 11 SS guys involved, not 50. And the planning was mostly army planning, you know, not SS planning and all that sort of thing. So, but I'll interrupt myself when I think Skorzeny is not being 100% accurate here. But there's a couple of paragraphs here just talking about the general picture before the actual mission starts. So I'll read that. We're told, quote, Otto Skorzeny was a junior Waffen SS officer serving in Berlin when a chance decision resulted in his overnight appointment as chief of Germany's special troops, prompted by the success of the raid on St. Nazaire by British commandos. See, Hitler had seen that and said, like, we need chaps that can do exactly that. Yeah, after Hitler had seen the successful British raid on St. Nazaire, Hitler ordered the setting up of a German equivalent. The Army High Command, however, regarded the order as another Hitler whim and pushed it around departmental pending trays. Eventually, it landed up on the desk of someone who remembered a university acquaintance who might do as leader of the new unit. And so Otto Skorzeny found himself plucked from behind a desk and breveted Chief of Special Troops. To mark the occasion, he was promoted to the rank of captain. As the world was soon to discover, the German army had inadvertently appointed a man who not only believed in the commando concept, but had the ability to carry it out. Born in Austria in 1908, Skorzeny was physically imposing, 6'4", with a dueling scar from ear to chin, charismatic and daring. Within 6 months of his appointment, Skorzeny had not only welded together a commando force, but had brought off the most improbable exploit of the war, the rescue of the Italian dictator Mussolini in September 1943 from the mountain prison where he was held by Italian forces intent on surrender to the Allies. Yeah, the people that had captured Mussolini. They were just waiting for the Allies to properly invade Italy, which was soon to come. And their idea was to just immediately surrender to them and hand Mussolini over. Right, so time was of the essence, basically. Other dazzling adventures quickly followed. In September 1944, Skorzeny kidnapped the son of the Hungarian regent and occupied the citadel of Budapest, a move which prevented Hungary concluding a separate peace with the USSR and rescued a million encircled German troops. During the Ardennes offensive, December 1944, he organised, quote, American brigades, quote, as disguised Germans to cause havoc behind enemy lines. Eisenhower was a prisoner in his own HQ for a week. With the conclusion of the war in Europe, Skorzeny, now a major general, was declared by the Allied prosecutor to be, quote, the most dangerous man in Europe, quote, and charged with war crimes, the most serious of which related to, quote, fighting in enemy uniform, quote, during the Ardennes offensive. At one stage, it looked as though Skorzeny would hang. His fate, however, was averted when his defence lawyer called as a witness the British war hero, Wing Commander Forrest Yeo Thomas, who revealed that the British had done the same thing in reverse as a matter of course. Skorzeny was duly acquitted. On his release from a prisoner of war camp, he settled in Spain, where he returned to his pre-war occupation of engineering. One of the most influential pioneers of special forces, Skorzeny died in 1975. The following is Skorzeny's own account of his greatest triumph, the liberation of Mussolini from Gran Sasso, a mountain range to the north of Rome. End quote. Okay, so, yeah, at this point, Mussolini, they'd moved him to the mountains north of Rome and the little place, sort of like a little ski resort, a little ski hotel place, was called Gran Sasso. And so what it was, this up in the mountains, it's like 2,000 metres up, and there's like a little hotel there. Well, I say little, it's sort of 4 stories, and like what, like 70-odd rooms, maybe 100 rooms total. So sort of a medium-sized, not tiny, but certainly not massive hotel, perched on the top of this mountain plateau area. And the only way up to it, other than some serious mountain climbing, was one cable car. I mean, that was the idea. That's why they put him there, because it's, you know, the idea was it's very, very, very difficult for any rescue party to even get there. There's one cable car, you know, and he's being guarded. Mussolini's being guarded by like 100-odd Italian policemen. And the one cable car station at the top of the mountain and at the bottom of the mountain is guarded by like another 100-odd. So they think he's pretty safe. I mean, on paper, he's pretty safe there. Right, it's almost impossible to get to him, and then he is guarded by quite a few people. So that's the idea. Now, the German sort of intelligence services were sort of following Mussolini around, following the trail of where Mussolini had been. They're trying to find exactly where he is. And often they're sort of just behind Mussolini. They realise, oh, we're only like a few days late or a few hours late. He's just been moved again. And anyway, they find out that he's being held at this hotel, this sort of ski resort hotel place on Gran Sasso, about 50 miles north of Rome, in the Apennine Mountains, the Abruzzo Mountains. They find out he's there and they know he'll be moved again quite soon. So everything, time is absolutely of the essence. You know, like almost every day, every hour counts. They know he's there, or they're pretty sure he's there. They send a spy there. They send a doctor chap who, his story, his cover, is that the Germans are considering turning that hotel into some sort of hospital or a makeshift hospital. And this guy is being sent there to check if it's an appropriate location to turn this hotel into a hospital. But what he's really there to do is check if Mussolini's really there. They think he's there. They're pretty confident he's there. But they need to know for sure, because loads of guys' lives are going to be put on the line for this. So they need to be 100% sure Mussolini is there. Anyway, this doctor spy finds out that Mussolini is definitely there. So it's go. It's like, go, now. That's, you know, often how special forces operations go. Like, it's now or never. So they do. All right, we'll let Scorzeny himself tell the story. And as I say, some of it has to be taken with a pinch of salt, and I'll let you know when we think that's the case. All right, so Scorzeny himself writes this, quote, September the 10th, 1943, we had not been out of our uniforms for two nights and days, and though our general was in the same case, it was essential that I should see him with a view to making the great decision, i.e. to pull the trigger on this operation, Operation Oak, and do it. But first, I discussed all the possibilities with Radl, who's just one of his SS pals. We both fully realised that speed was absolutely vital. Every day, every hour that we delayed increased the danger that the Duce, Mussolini, might be removed elsewhere. Nay, even worse, delivered over to the Allies. This supposition subsequently turned out to be most realistic. One of the terms of the armistice agreed by General Eisenhower was that the Duce should be handed over. A ground operation seemed hopeless from the start, the idea of sending in like the full army and, you know, surrounding the whole mountain or the whole region, really, and doing it that way. They didn't really have the resources, didn't really have the time. An attack on the steep, rocky slopes would have cost us heavy losses, as well as giving good notice to the enemy and leaving them time to conceal their prisoner. We hope you enjoyed that video, and if you did, please head over to lotuseaters.com for the full unabridged video.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.